Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of March 7th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me from Osaka is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud? You tired?
Me? I'm never tired.
I'm never tired except when you're sleeping. Dead. I got crickets here. I hope I can wake the crickets up at least.
No, I'm good. Yeah, great weekend with the National. Excuse me. I'm going to try to avoid using that with the self-styled national team.
Parts of the self-styled national team.
Well, yeah, the one that it's NPB's reasonable facsimile of a national team.
There you go. All right, on this show we are packed again. It seems we got to get.
Sounds like we've been working out, man.
We're ripped and packed. We got to stop this 2 week vacation thing. It's we've got to get into the regular season, which we're going to do. So yeah, on this week's show we've got an interview with Nippon Ham Fighter scout Matt Winters. We're going to talk about Nobuhiko Matsunaka's retirement, Yamaiko Navarro's bullet incident, and much more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right. I had the great pleasure of talking to Matt Winters twice in the last couple of weeks, once with a recorder on.
Ha ha ha.
Yes. Well,
he says joking.
Yeah. Well, that was the problem. He was in Arizona and we had sort of time issues. I could only talk to him while I was at the office calling from the office phone. So it didn't work out real well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to call him back when he returned home to North Carolina, and he was very gracious to spare time on his Sunday evening for me. And it was a good it's always fun to talk with Matt, and unfortunately we have a limited amount of time for the podcast, so, and we talked for an hour. And some of that stuff was pretty good, and unfortunately, well, you know, I guess wait for the book to come out.
Okay,
so anyway, Matt is, I guess, famous. He's probably more famous for his stunts when he was a player here with the Fighters. He was fearless, and I asked him, how did you get started doing the silly stuff, the dancing with the cheerleaders and the other things that he did and he was famous for? And he said, well, one day we were at Heiwa Dai Stadium in Fukuoka, and he was just sort of imitating the cheerleaders dancing. And his manager said, well, you think you're so hot, why don't you go out and do it? And he said, well, if you're going to dare me. Thus the legend began.
Yeah, much money has been lost on these kinds of things.
So anyway, so that's that. But yeah, he's an interesting guy and a very humble fellow. And so let's listen to what Mr. Winters had to say. Okay. Our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is NPB legend, Matt Winters.
Use that word loosely there.
Well, yeah, well, I do everything a little loosely. Thanks for being on the show. Now, Matt, you're currently, how long have you been a scout now with the Nippon Ham Fighters?
I believe this is my 10th year.
Holy smokes.
I know. I doubled my time playing.
I was going to say, that's a pretty good run. 5 years on the field, 10 years with the Fighters, and it's a heck of an organization.
It's, you know what, it's probably one of the best organizations to be affiliated with. You know, it's you know, from top to bottom, just, you know, good baseball people. And, you know, now that they moved to Sapporo, a lot more fans, and it's just got a good fan base. So it's fun to be a part. You know, I mean, when I left the game over there, I really missed Japanese baseball, and I was very fortunate to be able to get my job with the Fighters, the scout for them here.
So what are you, as a scout, what are perhaps some of the more fulfilling things, when if you look back at 10 years, what are the things you think, well, that was, that you're really, you know, proud of?
The one run that we had with the Bobby Keppel and the Wolf, you know, and the success of those guys had. You know, I always tell the players, I said, you can make my job the easiest job in the world if you go out there and perform. You know, your job, and I don't have to replace you. You know, I don't want to replace you. But, you know, we had Termell Sledge over there.
Yeah.
And you know, it was fun when they won the championship, and I was fortunate enough to be over there to be able to go up to the Sapporo for the parade.
Right.
you know, I just wish I'd have been a player for that, you know. I mean, that's when you feel like you missed out. But it's just, it's part, you know, it's nice to see the organization that I grew up in playing now is a success and one of the better, you know, better organizations over there. Here we're fighting for it, you know.
Well, you were part of that, I guess. You what did they call that with that line? You weren't with the Blue Thunder was Oryx, the Big Bang. That was after you. That was after the Big Bang.
That might have been after me.
That was Ogasawara and Kataoka and Sherman Obando and them.
I don't think you could probably say what they used to call our team, man.
Oh man. I remember going to those fighters games, and there'd be about 200 people around the infield, about 2,000 in the outfield. And there was this one fan who used to sit near the press box who could scream like a jet engine. And he'd be, you lousy SOB, what are you doing out there? And just screaming at the fighters players, insulting them day after day after day.
Yeah, we had a few fans like that, but you know what? I mean, we did have a good group, and when the one year when Osawa-san was the manager, and we came in second place, and we had, I forget what the holiday was, but we had three games against Cebu, and we sold out for all 3 days, and that was the most excitement, I think, in the Tokyo Dome that I was, you know, that was nice. I wish I could have had a playoff experience, but that was probably the closest I'd come to it over there.
Yeah, actually, I remember because you posted that picture on Facebook, and I thought somebody photoshopped it with all the fans at Tokyo Dome.
A lot of people there. We did it.
We did it, sure enough. It must be, I don't know, do you feel, you know, in regards to the players now who get that experience, you know, seeing 40,000 people pretty frequently at their games, on the weekends especially, are you envious or proud, or how do you feel about that?
You know what? I try to tell the guys to enjoy it as much as they can because the time goes quick.
Yeah.
And, you know, you better appreciate what you're doing now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I remember Dustin Mulligan, we had a right-handed pitcher was over there.
Yeah, yeah.
He came over to my spring training hotel the one time and all of a sudden he saw how small it was.
Right.
And I said, well, Dustin, here's a perfect example.
Right.
When you're a player, look at your room.
Right.
All right? You're an ex-player. This is what happens, all right? So fully enjoy the time you have playing.
Right.
You know, don't take anything for granted. And, you know, that's what we try to get guys, and that's one thing I like about the fighters. Makeup's big, and we try to get the guys that are going over there and wanting to make a career of it.
Mm.
You know, and I think we've done a pretty good job of that. You know, guys want to stick around for 3-4 years if they can.
Well, now, in your case, I guess you were a fairly prototypical guy to come to Japan, power hitter, who had, you know, who did very well at AAA level and came over here. What was your impression? Obviously, after, you know, trying to sort of stick in the majors for a long time, what was your first thought when you realized Japan was maybe your best option?
Well, you know, I had a coach, Smokey Garrett, who played for the Carp.
Oh, okay. Wayne Garrett. Yeah.
Yeah. And Smoke was an outstanding guy.
Okay.
And he was my coach there with the Royals. And when I first started getting wind of maybe going over to Japan, I talked to him, you know, and I just said, Smoke, what do you think? And he was like, go for it.
He said,
look, you've reached your dream of playing in the major leagues. He goes, now it's time to think about your family and, you know, and everything. And he goes, he had a great experience over there. And he just said, you know what? He goes, go for it. And so, you know, it was when you first show up for spring training over there, it is like, you know, I was fortunate Tony Brewer was there who had played, I think he was going on his fifth year at that time, Brian Dead, an old teammate. And I also had Tamura, our catcher, Fujio Tamura. He had played for Oneonta Yankees back in 1978, my first year of playing ball in the States.
Oh, okay.
So I actually started my career with him and finished my career with him as a teammate. So,
wow.
So, I mean, so that helped me out a lot. But still, you sit there, and my first year, I was shaking my head wondering, you know, why are we doing things like this? You know, why are we doing it this way? And by the time I got done, I'm going, well, how come we don't do this in the States?
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, I always think there's a perfect blend between the way they do things in the States and the way they do in Japan. There's a blend there. And the people that can kind of mix them together, it, you know, makes for a better game.
Well, obviously, there's a what I see is people coming over here and, you know, all playing in Japan. And like you said, it's a chance to secure, you know, get a secure a future for your family. But the atmosphere of playing in Japan is something that you really, I think it takes a lot of people by surprise.
Well, it's like a college football game almost when you first started the bands up and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I didn't know how to take that at first, but then I realized, you know, when I was playing left field and the other visiting team's bands going up there, well, I can't hear anybody heckling me, so that's a pretty good thing, you know. You know, you just go home and you got them chants in your head all day long, you know. Mm. But I mean, you couldn't really hear the hecklers, and then,
right,
you know, you go to some of those country towns and all of a sudden you're, winners, you're a bum, and you're like, how is there a gaijin here, you know? But,
did you ever get Japanese taunting you in English?
There were a couple guys that used to be by the dugout that would say some things, you know, go home, you know, and this, and, you know, a few other things. But, you know, for the most part, that's all right. It's when the Marines or the Air Force guys started heckling you, you're just going like, oh man, now we're going to be in for a long day.
The other,
but you know, one thing, Jim, though, I tell guys too, I said, hey, you know, you got to swallow your ego to go to Japan because,
oh, yeah,
you know, it doesn't matter what you've done here in the States, you know. Mm. I mean, it's you. And I played with a guy, Bill Baith,
who,
you know, Bill came over and was smoking the ball, had about 8 home runs in spring camp. And he's like, oh, this is easy. And I'm like, no, it's not. You know, just wait. You know, don't be overconfident, you know. Oh, well, I know the strike zone. I can do this, this, and this. And you're just like, no, just wait. Trust me. You gotta experience it. You don't know what you're in for.
So. Yeah. Yeah, it's such a different game that, I mean, it's obviously it's the same game, but the way it's approached makes it so different.
Well, and you know what helps is the guys that are over there, you kind of form a fraternity with the gaijin players. And like, you know, Brandon Laird struggled last year
right.
to the get-go. He went out and talked to a couple guys from other teams, mm-hmm. and they really helped put his mind more at ease and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, and we were fortunate that, you know, that's another thing that I love about the fighters. We give our guys a chance, you know. And, you know, he was hitting .180 after a couple of months, and you'd think most clubs probably would have been like, okay, let's replace. And, well, he ends up with 34 home runs. So, I mean.
Yeah, he was telling me he was thinking, when am I buying my tickets back to the States?
Yeah, well, I was thinking, when am I going to get fired here? And, you know, so.
Yeah, well, that's he turned your year around pretty much.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, but that right there, that's the satisfying thing about scouting is, you know, because we kind of fought for Laird to go over there because we thought he would be the RBI guy, you know, and to see him have success like that, you kind of feel good, like, okay, you know, I mean, we're not always going to be 100% positive, but you know, I mean, it's good, you know, as long as you're right more times than wrong, I guess.
Right, I hear you. Now you talked about being a scout, but obviously, you know, talking about individual, you're immersed in individual players and how well they can succeed in Japan. But you also have to have you can't avoid that big picture of, you know, how the team's doing. I know you watch a lot of the fighters' games. How do you build a team that can compete in the Pacific League against the SoftBank Hawks?
Well,
I mean, I already got I don't say this, but I already got my hotels booked for November.
Yeah, you know, and hopefully we have that team this year. I mean, I think, you know, the addition that we put in with Martin and Bass, I think pitching wise is going to help us tremendously.
Well, let's talk about that. What do they bring?
Well, we got Bass. Bass will probably be starting, you know, and Bass is mid-90s kind of, you know, guy, and he's had success in the States here throwing, and we believe, you know, that he'll go out there and be a good pitcher behind Mendoza and Ohtani and Arihara. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, he's, what, maybe a fourth, fifth guy for you.
Okay.
And it'll give you quality starts. And, you know, Martin coming out of the bullpen, you know, he's got a good angle. He's tall, probably the tallest guy we've had with the fighters.
Okay.
So he's got a good angle with the fastball. And, you know, a lot of American League, American scouts here in the States were like going, hey, you guys did well with your picks this year, you know. So, I mean, so we feel good about those two guys. Mm-hmm. You know, Laird, we're looking for another year out of him like he had last year. And if, you know, we talked earlier about Ohtani, you know, if he can add some offensive juice, you know, we should be able to compete in a short series. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be hard over the 150 games or whatever it is. You know, the Hawks do put together an all-star team.
Yeah.
But I think we're in a position where, you know, a short series, you know, anything can happen.
Okay, well, let me ask, you mentioned Ohtani, and I'm going to ask about his pitching a little bit, because we've mostly been talking about his hitting all spring. People have been talking about his pitching, too. It's not like he's ready to give, you know, get rid of them pitching shoes. The one story that I read about when he was in Arizona was his talking with, was it Trevor Hoffman?
Yeah.
And yeah. His changeup, apparently he worked with a changeup over the winter. And then he gets to work to talk with Trevor Hoffman. He came back to Japan, and he's not going to throw it his first game. So I'm going, well, what was up with that? And now he breaks it out the other day in a practice game. And and it's like, did you see him throw his changeup?
Well, you know, I know he threw one in the bullpen.
Okay.
And there are people there going, we've never seen him throw a changeup. So, you know, and if you're going to learn a changeup, you might as well learn it from Trevor Hoffman, I guess. You know, maybe, you know, hey, if he can get that in his arsenal, more power to us.
Yeah, well, that's how.
I know talking to the guys that he didn't really throw it very much last year. Uh-huh. So
I'd never seen it, but looking at the poor Koreans, of course, he does that with a slow curve anyway. You know,
yeah,
it's 160, 160, and then there's that, you know, 120 curve. And but watching the Koreans try to deal with that changeup, I mean, it looked like they wanted to go out to the mound and hit him. Like, don't do that. It's not fair.
Well, he was a very popular player when he was over here in the States for spring training. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I can't really put out enough news about him. So how do you think he'll do in the States when he does go? Because I obviously, if unless something goes really wrong, which pitchers can go extremely wrong, he is going to end up in the major leagues at some point.
He'll do just fine. You know, if that day comes, you know, and that's for the higher-ups to decide. But, you know, I mean, he'd be coming out of college right now, right?
Right.
And the scouts over here say, you know, he'd be a number one out of the college. You know, he'd be number one in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
As a pitcher, he'd be number one as a hitter, too, probably.
Huh.
You know, I mean, so you got two guys in one. There's no doubt if he stays the way he is and continues to work like he does, there's no doubt he'll have success wherever he pitches. So.
Now, I have to ask, because, you know, from my viewpoint as a fan, I've always been a little bit, maybe I'm an anarchist, but I love the fact that he hits and pitches, because it's nobody does it. It's entertaining. And he had a heck of a rookie season. I mentioned the other week that he's one of 11 players in Japanese baseball history to have 15 extra base hits at the age of 18.
Yeah.
I mean, and the other guys are a bunch of Hall of Famers.
Well, the one club that was at spring training almost every day was the San Francisco Giants.
Right.
And, you know, and they kept saying, well, you know, Bumgarner, you know, yep. Bumgarner likes to hit. So it'd be interesting to have Bumgarner and Ohtani on the same bench. You'd have a right-handed pinch hitter and a left-handed pinch hitter.
Well, you'd have a right-handed pitcher who hits lefty and a lefty who hits right-handed.
Yeah.
So they'd have all their bases covered. Okay,
Jim, you got to root for the Fighters, so I get over there in October. So,
well,
I mean,
that's a good reason to root for the Fighters.
They'll fly us over for the Nippon Series, so I mean, you know, you can see me in Sapporo.
Oh, that sounds good to me. Okay, well, Matt, thanks so much for being on the show, and we look forward to seeing you in Japan this year.
I hope to get over there. Thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot, man. So, thanks again, Matt, for joining us and spending your time with us.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Matt. One of these days.
Straight to the moon by that time. So, John, what do you have to say about that?
Well, I mean, other than you telling him your hotel reservations were already made in Fukuoka for the Japan series, so why the heck are you guys playing?
Well, actually, I'll be honest, they're not the only place I've learned from. Hard lessons in the past that you make your hotel reservations in June for
right.
the Japan series and then you cancel them.
Right. But two things stuck with me that I really wanted to point out. And one, I mean, you asked him about building a team, what's necessary to build a team to beat the Hawks. And he emphasized the short series situation. So I think he kind of agreed with you. Hey, look, And this format forces you to do this, because if you're going to win the league title, or even if you end up winning the league title, you've got to beat the teams that you beat to get there again in the playoffs, or it really means nothing. So his answer told us everything we needed to know. Hey, who cares basically what happens in the regular season? It's all about the postseason. Now, you know, if we win the league series or the league title, that gives us the advantage. But either way, we're going to have to beat them again in a short series.
Right. But try telling that to the Hiroshima Carp last year. It doesn't matter what you do in the regular season.
As long as you make the playoffs.
Exactly. As long as you finish third.
Well, that's what we're talking about here.
Okay, there is a hurdle there. There is a hurdle of performance there. Okay.
Right, and that's what we're talking about. So,
yeah.
I mean, what he's saying is, and what I heard was, SoftBank is really too good. They have, in fact, he used the words all-star team. He tried to sneak it in while you were talking over his answers. But anyway.
Hashtag high heat.
I did hear it, and he said all-star team.
Are you through?
No, I got some more jabs. Why?
Okay. I didn't want to interrupt you while you were insulting.
I got some Conor McGregor in me. I know that reference just skips right over you. So anyway.
Indeed. That's a foreign language. Okay.
All right. So yeah, I mean, I think you guys would probably expect to hear something like this on the prediction show. A lot of people talking about how good SoftBank is, and he's talking about how good SoftBank is. So that's no surprise. And it's not to say that the PL teams are running around with white flags. That's not what I think he's saying. But it's all about, you know, what you do in the postseason and overcoming that team in a short series and building your team to be able to do that. And I think that's what he was talking about. He pointed out some good pitchers. He talked about some power they have. He didn't really talk about how they're going to score runs, and that's really what you need to do with SoftBank, because they can match you with zeros on the board. You got to figure out how to outscore them in the playoffs and in a short series. And in the meantime, keep them off the scoreboard as much as possible. And then the other thing was kind of subtle about how our initial reaction to things like the batting practice, and I say our, is the Westerner comes over to Japan, and you see the pregame group stretches, you see the long infield, you see the nagekomi, you see the marathon infield practices, and you see so many things that probably MLB guys would look at and say, what the heck's going on here? But then after you do it, and it kind of builds that team unity and that team purpose. Even if you don't like it, and I see guys now, and you go to baseball games here, and so do I. I mean, you see the pregame stretch. Some guys take it really seriously, and some guys just go through the motions, but they do it all together.
Right.
And that building of team unity is part of why they do it together, and they don't do that in the States. I remember when I went over to talk to Hideki Matsuya, I think it was 2007 or 8. And I just noticed how nobody did anything together. And, some guys would come out and they'd be doing their own thing everywhere from the clubhouse all the way out to the outfield fence where some guy was doing running on his own. It was all separate. And here it's all together. Everybody does the stretch together. And then you do your outfield. I'm sorry, you do your fielding practice together and blah, blah, blah. So
I don't know if you remember. I'm sorry to step in there, but I don't know if you remember when teams used to run before they stretched, and they were going 1-2, 1-2. They'd like do a circuit of the field.
No, I don't remember that.
You remember that one? That was pretty common. The first day I went to talk to Bobby Valentine was his last day in 1995, and the Marines were out running. I believe it was the Marines were out running, and like U.S. Marines. You know, I expected Gunnery Sergeant Hartman to be out chasing him.
Yeah, I mean, it's just different. It's just different. And when you see that as a Westerner or a guy who's coming over from major leagues, you just think it's weird. But then I think once you get used to it,
right,
it's something you would like to practice. You'd like to bring back to the States. I think that's right. I got that impression from him, and he said, how come we don't do things like this in the States, and that says it all. So those were the two things that really stuck out for me. What about you?
Well, I think I'm going to just comment here that's a pretty common, I think you and I have both experienced that shock, you know, when you start with, hey, that's weird, why do they do it, to eventually, why do we do it a different way in the States?
Yeah,
you start looking for reasons and rationale behind something that seems so fuzzy and strange, and you realize, oh well, there are other ways of doing things, which I love about living in a foreign country.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, moving on from that, I think a couple of things. One was I loved the scout's view of the world.
Meaning, you know, he's looking down on everything.
No, I don't mean that.
That was a plus waitress I had today. You see the speech he came out with that dish?
I don't want to touch that one. Well, I can't touch it. I don't want it.
Okay.
So, no, that's not what I meant. But, you know, when you and I are involved with baseball, and we have our point of view, and the scouts have their point of view, and the managers and the players and the statisticians, they all have their points of view. And I love how it's almost always about my point of view, whatever point of view that happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if I'm a reporter and I'm not going to the two road Japan series games, I hope you don't sweep because I want to see you come back and go to more games.
Right.
Okay. And if you're Matt Winters, it's like, you know, we think you're a good player, but don't screw up. I don't want to have to replace you. I went to a lot of trouble to get you this job, you know.
Don't make me look bad.
Exactly.
And don't make me make you look bad.
Yep. So that was one thing.
Yeah, you laughed. You laughed really hard when he said that. So I knew you liked that point. I'm not surprised that you brought that up.
Well, I think one, and the point that you made about adapting to Japanese culture and getting used to being a scout. You know, he and I in the first interview we did about 2 weeks before that, we talked a lot about Shohei Ohtani. Some of that wound up in a newspaper article. And we talked about Ohtani's hitting, and he, you know, he had to say sort of grudgingly,
mm-hmm.
you know, what everybody else says. Well, and, you know, the guy can throw really hard. Now he's got a change up, and he always had the nice curve. You know, he knows what he's doing on the mound, so he's going to succeed. And I like that. I like the attitude. You know, as long as we got him, we hope he's as good as it can be.
Right, right.
But again, you know, it's hard to pin people down on the subject of should he hit or should he not hit. The only answer I ever get
mm-hmm.
is, oh, well, he's such a gifted pitcher. Why would you want him to hit? And I answer with, well, he's such a gifted batter. Why would you want him to pitch?
Right.
Which is...
And then the standoff begins.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would have to think... I would have to think he was in, you know, it may not seem like the case because baseball is so tuned into the fact that, that there are never enough pitchers, but that's because teams want 15 of them. You know, that's like if you needed 15 third basemen, there'd never be enough third basemen.
That's true.
But I think his talent as a hitter is probably more rare than his talent as a pitcher. Nobody likes to say that, but because you've got teams with 20, you know, you use 15 pitchers and you're not using 15 batters in a game usually.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Anyway, so that's my thing with Ohtani. And so speaking of Ohtani,
making a two-seam transition, let's talk about him. Yeah.
Yeah, let's.
In Wednesday's preseason game versus the Giants at Sapporo Dome, he worked 5 innings, and he hit 160 kilometers per hour, and then he hit 162
on with the next pitch. Turn.
Yeah, with the next pitch. And he throws 68 pitches mm-hmm. and strikes out 8 Giants through 5 innings. I mean, man, what a talent.
Yeah, I mean, like, count that out. 8 strikeouts, 58 pitches. What's left?
68.
8 strikeouts on 68 pitches. That's pretty good. Those are pretty good numbers.
That's pretty efficient. And we're talking preseason. So it begs the question, why wasn't he with the Samurai Japan team? You think he couldn't get ready after throwing maybe 3 or 4 innings against Taiwan, for goodness sakes? Give me a break.
Well, here's the thing. And... Actually, I heard a story about that today.
Oh, yes. The Mr. Out and About gets the story. What is it?
And that was Hiroshi Gondo joked. He said, if I'm still a pitching coach, Otani might not even want to be on the team for the WBC because I heard when he heard I was a coach, he said, no, thanks.
Oh.
But I think he was joking.
Yeah.
But I think it was more of Kuriyama, the manager, saying, no, you can't have my guy. Because all the stuff is, I'm not going to choose opening day starters. Well, you know, Ogawa pitched opening day starter. Sugano,
yeah. Well, but I don't know that he's been named yet.
I don't know, yeah.
But he's a favorite. He's one of the top candidates for
opening. I agree. So we've got basically a bunch of guys who are likely to start on opening day pitching for Samurai Japan. So I don't buy the bit about Kokubo not wanting to interfere with his preparations. What I hear is Kuriyama saying, look, he's got enough on his plate already. Don't pick him.
Yeah. So in this game, this preseason game, this was this past Wednesday, he looked in midseason form. He got guys to chase a bunch of pitches out of the strike zone. Then the super fastballs that he threw were to Garrett Jones of the Giants. I'm sorry, formerly of the Pittsburgh Pirates.
New York Yankees.
And the New York Yankees, and he flailed at those fastballs, and he said Ohtani is major league worthy right now.
Yep.
I say Ohtani is amazing, and it's all I can do to not write blog posts about him every day. I just have to stop myself. I can write about Ohtani, and then I just have to stop myself and say, no, people don't want to read about this yet. The season hasn't even started. Let's
yeah, slow down, John. Yeah, but here's the thing. He is the news. I think right now he is the Japanese baseball news. You know, him and Kenta are, you know, related to Japan, him and Kenta Maeda, until Ichiro has his next 15 seconds of fame.
Oh, hashtag hi.
Oh, Charlie, 15 minutes. Wow, I shortchanged him by a factor of 60.
I'll tell you this, though. I don't want to hear anything about cramps for Ohtani this season.
Yeah.
None of that. I'll be ready to explode if I hear that again. It's time to grow up, son. Grow into your man body and get rid of those cramps. I hope they have that figured out.
That would be good because it was used an excuse to keep him from hitting last year, and it didn't help because he didn't pitch or hit the second half of the season.
Right. Okay, making a seamless transition. On Tuesday, one of the most popular players, I would say one of the most respected players in NPB.
I would agree with that.
Retired, and that's Nobuhiko Matsunaka of the SoftBank Hawks. He had a self-imposed deadline of February 29th to find a new team after leaving the SoftBank Hawks, or asking for and receiving his release from the team last year.
Well, they were going to release him anyway.
Let's just put it that way. Yeah, it sounds better.
Okay.
And, you know, he couldn't find a team. Now, the first thing I thought is, of course, the teams that finished low in the Pacific League would be looking for a DH kind of pinch hitter guy at the end of his career, and that he could fit in there, but no one felt he was worthy of even a tryout, and so he's done after 19 seasons. So tell me this, because I'm looking at his numbers and I'm thinking Hall of Fame or not Hall of Fame, and what I'm seeing is a guy who's barely on the outside of the Hall of Fame, but he's so popular and so respected, I actually think he gets in.
I agree with you, and you know, Matsunaka is a difficult person, and I say this, superb numbers, but he could be difficult with people. When he was a young player, and I think it happened about the time he won the Triple Crown.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it seems like he either liked people or he didn't like them. You know, they were either on his in list or his out list.
Uh-huh.
And he sort of, like, you know, he divided the world into these groups. And I don't even want to start with that. You know, I can't accept that analysis as being exact, but that's how it appears to be.
Right.
Because people. He was when he was with the Hawks in the first until about 2004. He was the guy. He was like the greeter at the restaurant. All the foreign players who came, who, you know, they were uncomfortable being in Japan, Matsunaka would take them out to dinner. You know, he'd show them around Fukuoka. He was the guy, kind of the glue that held that team together, brought the foreigners and the Japanese together. And I asked Sadaharu about it. He says, "I'm so thankful that he does that, because I cannot interact with players, but he takes that all on himself."
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, talking to some of the players who Matsunaga took under his wing years later and talking about Matsunaga, and I got vastly different opinions. The people who loved him really got tired of him. So there was a dynamic there that was not obvious. He was so well respected for his ability to hit and his ability to play, you know, what he did on the field. But his role, he became, I would have to say, divisive to some degree. But I speak of people who said, oh, yeah. And I'll, the other thing I'll say about Matsunaga is that he was perhaps one of my favorite base runners.
Yeah, you...
I've talked about this at times, but he did. I did the blog post when I talked about him, his retirement. My blog said something to the. I looked at players who were similarly slow, and he scored a lot of runs. Not the most runs, mind you, but he scored a lot of runs for people who don't hit triples and don't steal bases.
Right.
And the other thing he did quite well is he didn't steal bases, but he was good at it when he did.
Right, he brought a gun and a mask, and he stole it, you know.
Well, no, it wasn't that he was an aggressive runner who could take chances, you know, and dare people to throw him out. But if you were going to give him an inch, he was going to take a foot.
Right, he had a good feel for the game.
He had an exceptional sense for where the ball was and how it affected his running. I don't think I ever saw him thrown out on the bases. So, wonderful.
Yeah, he doesn't have the 2,000 hits. He's in at 1,767. He's under 300 as a career hitter. His resume says 19 years, but I think the last five actually were not as a significant player, so it's more like 14-plus.
Yeah, but for a stretch of about 5 years, from 2003 to 2006, maybe 2007, he was the most dominant player in NPB. Now, of course, the only thing is that at that point, he couldn't perform in the postseason.
A career 200 hitter I saw on the news the other day.
Yeah.
200 hitter in the postseason.
At the very end of his career, actually, he got better.
Yeah, he did. In fact, I remember, 2011? I think he had a pinch hit homer off the lines. I think it was Makita who was throwing in the playoffs, and that was the highlight of his career, I think, since 2010 in the postseason. So I remember that, but not a very good postseason player.
No, but he was such a good guy in the regular season. So now, does he look like a Hall of Famer? You know, I don't know why he didn't seem like a Hall of Famer. Maybe because he and I didn't get along. You know, he took something wrong that I said. You know, I made a joke once and he took it wrong and wouldn't talk to me after that. But apparently I wasn't the only person. I found a lot of reporters who really couldn't stand him. And I think it's because of that same reason. You know, he took something the wrong way or something. But in any case, his overall career shouts Hall of Fame. I mean, the guys who are in the Hall of Fame who had similar careers, I would say everybody who had a similar career is in the Hall of Fame, or for one reason or another can't be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I found what's most remarkable about him is his strikeouts and walks in his career. 857 walks and just 909 strikeouts.
Wow. And this is for a guy who hit a lot of home runs.
Yeah, really amazing stuff.
And, it is amazing.
And, you know, he was feared. He was a main cog, I think, on a winning team. And that's he's got great resume stuff.
Yeah, I think so.
And like I said, that respect from his peers is why I think he's going to get in. But if I were to look at the numbers, I probably – and what was it, MVP twice, league MVP twice. He had the Triple Crown in 2004 when he hit 358 with 44 homers and 120 RBIs. I mean, he had a career high of 46, two-time home run champ. So, I mean, he's got some stuff on his resume that makes you say, hey, this guy's pretty good.
Well, he's a very similar player. I guess I'll throw out a couple of players who are very similar. Tuffy Rhodes.
And 300, his home run total is 352, I think. So nowhere close to Tuffy.
well, but some guys who are definitely Hall of Famers, he's up there. And I think I would be surprised if he doesn't make it, unless it's, you know, it's like his relationship with the media. I don't think he has a bad relationship with the media. I guess it's occasionally not positive. That's different.
Okay. All right. Now we're going way back into time here to talk about this issue. So I don't know what kind of transition it'll be, but I nicknamed this one "Oh Shoot," because the Chibolote Marines Yamiko Navarro was found to have bullets in a carry-on bag way back at, I don't know, this was, seems like last year sometime that we're talking about it now. But I mentioned it on the in a blog post, and I think we mentioned that it happened before. I'm not sure. I don't want to get myself into trouble, and he's wrong. And the airport in the Dominican Republic that let him get through security with these bullets in the bag is just as culpable as anyone in this incident. But we can't totally absolve the system because it didn't save the player itself. Mm. But I think I saw a story in which Tony Blanco, this ran in, I can't remember which paper it was, but one of the sports dailies here. And he said he had 16 bullets in a piece of luggage, and the airport in the Dominican Republic found that and got it out of the bag. Mm. And he ended up not coming in. He says, gee, I know I would have been reprimanded had that been caught with that. It probably would have even been fired. So I saw that in one of the sports dailies. So, you know, we have to blame Navarro because he did leave these things in, these items in the bag.
Yeah. So, and tip for players in the Dominican where bullets are okay is empty the bag completely before you come to Japan.
Well, I have a better idea, but I want to get to, yeah, I'll get to that in a few minutes here. I got some, I did like a quick Twitter poll. Steve, the Lotte Marines guy, said, because the team ended up giving him a 1 month suspension and fined him 500,000 yen, mm-hmm. which is really not much, because we know that Maximo Nelson of the Chunichi Dragons in 2010 had experienced a similar incident where a bullet was found in one of the bags that he brought to Japan. And again, it wasn't found in the Dominican, but it was found at the Okinawa airport, and he was taken into custody, blah, blah, blah. The team, the Dragons, suspended him for 3 months. Mm-hmm. And so there's a precedent set. So when I saw the 1 month suspension and the 500,000 yen, which is what, about a week and a half's worth of baseball games for one of these guys, I did a poll. Steve, the guy from Lotte, said it was just about right. Wes, one of the graveyard guys, said it was way too heavy. Mm-hmm. Isaac Ikuma said it was probably about right, and he used to cover the Marines as a Fox reporter, and he said he would have liked to have seen him get less, because clearly it was unintentional, but it's a serious issue here in Japan. So I understand that. But I also think because there's already a precedent that's been set, I think the commissioner might step in and do something. But I don't know. But here's my idea. When you sign a Dominican player, you write into his contract that you will purchase him new luggage and that he is to use that luggage to come to Japan. End of story. Carry-ons, check-in luggage, all of it. It will all be purchased by the team, and that's written into the contract. And we won't have this anymore because it's, I mean, I don't want to blame the Dominican Republic, because a lot of countries have guns in the culture, and Japan doesn't, and it's very strict. I don't care about that. I don't even care about the airport letting it get through. Somebody has to take charge, and I think it's going to have to be the Japanese teams. And I just don't want to see players have to waste time sitting around for having, you know, my comment is always, what are they going to do, throw the bullet at somebody? I mean, let's be serious here. It's just a bullet. It's not a gun. It's not even a piece of a gun. It's a part that goes inside of a gun, but it certainly isn't dangerous on its own. So let's get rid of this. So your thoughts?
Well, I like your idea. You know, no new luggage. Sure. Dominican guys, here's your contract, here's your reporting day, here's your new suitcase.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, can go with any player, actually. Sure. We'll write it in for anyone in a society or in a country where guns are prevalent. Just write it in.
So all the Americans get it.
Americans get it, too. Why not? You know, it's just a piece of luggage. They're paying for an expensive ball player. Buy some luggage to go with it. So, to me, the difference between Maximo Nelson and Navarro is Navarro was having an outstanding two-game stint in spring, and Maximo Nelson really wasn't in the rotation at the time. And I think that's why the Dragons wanted to send a message and give him 3 months. I think Chiba Lotte is looking at this guy saying, hey, we need this guy.
Yeah, let's not
have
let's
him
not
after suspend. Just a month here.
That's right. I think we can cut it short. There were no deaths involved.
Right, right. So, and I think that's a big difference. And I don't know if the commissioner is going to step in or not. I was going to ask one of my Japanese reporter friends, but they were too busy to get back to me. So I don't have their opinion on it. But something tells me that there could be a little bit more. But we'll have to wait and see how this plays out. But I haven't heard anything. This was decided this past week. So if we don't get anything by next week, I think it's going to fly.
Okay.
All right. Moving along. We want to talk about the Foo Fighters. I didn't think it was a big deal. I remember early on when training camp was about to start that Kazuhisa Makita and one of the coaches at the Sabre Lions, I think it's Yoshihiro Doi, they both had come down with the flu. And then we heard that a couple of fighters got, I don't want to go through the whole laundry list, but then eventually I heard there were three fighters who came down with it. Some Dragons guys came down with the flu. And it brought back those memories. I think it was 2009,
mm-hmm.
when a handful of fighters had type A influenza in August.
Right.
And the team had to struggle. And I remember bringing up
kind of illness.
Slightly whiplash. Kind of giggle there.
What is the humor behind illness?
There's no humor. It's just that every time they would lose, because they were doing really well during the stretch, and every time they would lose, I would start off a story about how the fever had hit the fighters, or they couldn't. There was one thing they couldn't battle, and it was their own temperatures or something. I was just making up all these stories, and Jim looked at me one day and says, "Enough."
Jim, you mean Jim Nishi? I hear the voice.
No, it's you.
Me?
You looked at me.
You did your Jim Nishi voice.
Well, because I was doing the Mad Jim, who doesn't come out that often, I must say, but it was the Mad Jim.
Are you kidding?
Enough. Not Mad Jim, just Stern Jim. How's that? You weren't angry, but you're like, okay, enough. Enough. And I had,
I think it a whole lot, but I don't say it a lot.
Well, I drove you to say it. So,
ow.
We've had a lot of these flu bugs running around. I hope it doesn't impact some of the teams. And this was in August for the fighters in 2009, so it could potentially stick around. And we've had some flu issues in the general public here. So we've even had some at our office. I haven't told you, but a few people have gone down with the flu at our office. So
yeah, I mean the national team. I both not just Japan. I know Shingo Kawabata had the flu and couldn't attend the national team games and. Genji Akami and I was going, darn, I'm sure glad to be here. Too bad for him. And
whack, whack, whack. Because he had.
Yes.
Yeah, he was hitting.
There were a couple of players who were out with influenza, and one of the Taiwan players, the one I really wanted to talk to, Yang Yao Shun,
mm-hmm.
the brother of Yang Dai Fighters outfielder Yang Dai Kong, was coming, and I wanted to talk with him, and. He was a last-minute scratch. He didn't make the trip because of influenza.
So something to look at. I hope it doesn't impact a lot of teams as we move forward here, but it could. So
it could, because the thing is, when you're – and I think one of the reasons it spreads is one of the reasons flu viruses spread in the military is that people are there being together on the field doing their group stretching. They're often in – small confined spaces on the same buses during spring training.
Right.
And although they're all physically fit, they're also exhausting their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So the resistance tends to be a little low.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, let's hope it doesn't impact them as they go along. All right. So let's get into the notes now. The sliding rule is changing in the United States in the major leagues.
Right.
And I immediately thought, okay, a lot of times Japan mimics or follows the United States in terms of its rulemaking. So I expect to see this sliding rule at second base, basically at any base, but particularly at second base, come to Japan at some time soon. But I don't think we need it in Japan. I wouldn't say it's completely unnecessary. But
it's essentially unnecessary because nobody does that in Japan. Even the foreigners don't do it even the foreigners don't do that in Japan.
Right. So do you see it coming here as well? I mean,
yeah,
you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
As soon as next year or they're going to wait and see how it plays out.
Since it was because it was introduced, it was brought up and it could be brought up so quickly in MLB because it was a joint venture of MLB and the union. So it could be promulgated and enacted very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to the collision rule at home plate, that was something MLB brought on, and they sort of challenged the union to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a one-year test, and it wasn't made official until the next year. So this will be in that case because it's a late addition. So I'm guessing the rules at second base will be added in 2 years. Now, the interesting thing is that second base plays are now going to be reviewable. And gradually that could have an impact on Japan eventually. But I think the big impact is when I heard this, I remembered an earlier talk I had with Matt Winters. I guess it was a month ago or so,
mm-hmm.
in which he talked about the future of Japanese baseball players in the States being better for position players because, you know, the wave of position players who went to the States basically 2001 to 2008,
mm-hmm.
they had to deal with guys who were on steroids. I don't mean deal with them like fight them off like they were zombies or something, but I mean they had to compete with guys who were on steroids.
Uh-huh.
And Matt was saying, I think the ban on steroids is going to help Japanese players because it's going to be a level playing field relatively.
Okay, yeah, you mentioned something about that last time as well, yeah.
Right, well, Matt brought that up. And then I think the sliding will help too because it's not something Japanese players have to contend with. And all of a sudden you're 28 years old and you're not used to this kind of the speed of these ice hockey-like collisions.
Nishioka, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, nothing against Nishioka, but it did happen to him, and it is unfortunate because he was off to a good start, and it happened to it really kept Kazuo Matsui's career from it did take off, but it took 3 years to take off.
Mm.
And Munenori Kawasaki, I was surprised because he hasn't had a serious injury, but he said I've been hurt a lot on those plays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so. I'm thinking, wow, this is going to be a big thing. If Japanese middle infielders can take their game to the States and not be wiped out, you know, not constantly being ground down by injuries,
mm-hmm.
We're going to see a new version of baseball, I think, a new version of what Japanese players mean in the MLB.
Yeah, I'm hoping. Well, I didn't. Obviously, I think the rule is going to have to go through experience its growing pains in MLB this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to watch it and see how it develops and how to call it. Because I still think, I mean, I saw some parody videos on Twitter and on Facebook of how to slide and what's a good slide and what's not a good slide. And they were pretty funny and entertaining. But I think it's going to take people a little while to figure it out and figure out how to call them. So I think I don't see it coming next year, but maybe in 2018, probably they could think about implementing something.
Well, do you remember all the talk about the collision rule at home plate and about a third of the catchers going, well, I'm just going to keep doing what I always did. And that's not baseball. But what happened to those people?
Don't know where they are.
I don't know. I think they're hiding somewhere. the chief objection to this was from Terry Collins, which I thought was hilarious. Terry's great. He said, you know, some guy's gonna get late. He said infielders are gonna get lazy at second base, and somebody's gonna come in too hard. And he said somebody's gonna get killed out there.
That's very Terry.
You watch it. You watch it. You'll see. Somebody's gonna get killed out there.
Gonna be death. All right. Well, there's gonna be death in the preseason. I don't have anything to talk about the fake baseball, but I did write a blog post about it the other day because I did see some data on the Newell data site, and I wanted to point that out. and it got me thinking, and I put together this little blog post. But the data that I saw was from the year 2001 to 2015. There have only been two teams that finished with the worst record in preseason and were able to win their respective league titles. So it's not a good idea to finish in last place in the preseason, Chunichi Dragons, who are there right now. But let's talk about the Samurai Japan games. They had two warm-up games heading toward the WBC that's going to be taking place in another year. So I don't know why they're calling them warm-up games. I think they're just kind of, let's get the national team together and see who's on the team and who's get some experience for our manager who's likes to lead pitchers out there to get their brains beat in late in the games. Let's do that.
Yeah, that can't hurt. I mean, well, yeah, I actually asked a bunch of people. I said, do these things have any value? Because I was telling the wife I'm going to these games on Saturday and Sunday, she said,
for games that are going to be played next year, and they're called warm-up games. And she said,
no. She said, I heard these games are completely meaningless. And I thought, well, I know that's not true. They're not completely meaningless. There'll be sponsorship money and there'll be advertisement and so on. But
there's money. You know, there's dollars to be made, honey. That's not meaningless.
That's right. And she said, but none of them will be going your way. I said, the precious few, yes. So anyway, the next conversation was, you know, asking the same question to a couple of the players and to a couple of the coaches, and basically the answer was the same. It's really important. It's good for the national team that guys who are that guys are selected, that guys aren't selected, and it's also good for the national team to have the best players in Japan getting together, training together, because I think it helps those players be better players, and I think that was that's what Atsunori Inaba said. You get better being with better players. So these guys are learning more on the national, you know, for 5 days with the national team, they're learning more than they're going to learn in camp.
True. I got that.
They're going to go back to their teams better players. They're going to have a higher level of competition, not only against Taiwan, but against each other. And they'll also have, you know, the renewed sense of, I think the other part of it is, I was selected, you weren't, you know. Get your act together.
Yeah, raise your game.
It was good, and it was very good for Tomoyuki Sugano, because he said yesterday, after he had a very good game in the opener, and he said, this was a huge game for me, because until now, when I was with the national team, I was on the same team with Shohei Ohtani and Kenta Maeda. And I tried to be a better pitcher than I am. I tried to do things I'm not capable of doing, and I got my head handed to me. I got tight. I got a little tight. I didn't do as well as I normally would have. And so part of it was that. Part of it was being on the national team. So he was thankful for the opportunity to have the Japan flag on his uniform again and feel, you know, there's that little pressure of wearing your country's colors and performing. And he could just say, okay, I got to calm down if I'm going to do this. And he did well. And so hopefully that was a big step for him. He called it a big step. So hopefully that will be a big step.
They played two games this weekend, one on Saturday at Nagoya Dome, and that was a 5-0 victory over Taiwan. After the Masahiro Yamamoto retirement tear-shedding game. And then... then they played game two at Osaka Dome on Sunday, and they won that game. I actually didn't see the final score. It was 9-3. 9-3. Late home run by Yoshitomo Tsutsugo of the Bay Stars helped put that away. And clearing the bases, triple by Ryota Hirata of the Chunichi Dragons really broke it open. So up to that point, it was kind of goofy. And in fact, it was the third inning that Japan gave up the first run of the game. I thought Kenta Imamiya had a really bad inning. He had a throwing error. What looked like a double play ball, but he threw it past the second baseman.
Shota Takeda had a throwing error. And Imamiya made a bad throw to second, which cost him a double play.
Right. But then, after that, with two outs and I think it was first and third, Taiwan put on a delayed double steal. And Ginjiro Sumitani was the catcher, and he throws through to second base. Now, I think it was Kenta Imamiya.
No, it was Kikuchi.
It was Kikuchi?
With Kikuchi at second base, covering.
Covering at second base. And all he had to do was tag the runner, and right. The inning would have been over, and he decides, no, I'm going to throw the ball back to the plate and let's a run in. So, you know, again, they just had a bad game. Defensively, and their minds seem to be wandering or something. Yep. It was just kind of weird.
And like after that, everything kicked in. I mean, they turned around and were Terminators.
Right.
And Imamiya had ended up having quite a good game. Of course, right after he missed the double play throw from shortstop, he jumped up to catch a ball way over his head. He's not very tall to begin with. And they panned the camera on Hayato Sakamoto, who's about 5 inches taller. And Sakamoto was on camera. He was, if that was me, I wouldn't have to jump. he was going, I'd have that one in my sleep, babe.
Right, yeah. I might be on my toes, but, you know.
but anyway.
Yeah, it's a nice play for you.
So, and then Kikuchi came back with the play of the game, which was he led off the next inning with a bunt single, and Taiwan's pitcher threw it into right field. The right fielder threw it. In which Kikuchi got head slid into first base. He saw the ball bouncing around right field, so he took off for second.
Yeah, right fielder should have put that ball in his pocket, conceded right. second base, but he decided to throw it.
The right fielder is thinking, oh, man, he's going to challenge my arm. I'll show him.
Right.
And Kikuchi ends up at third. You know, it was something that Kokubo said about the national team, which was interesting. He said it the other night because Shogo Akiyama, the Lions, had some really nice base running, going to second on a fly to medium deep center. And he said, look, in international competition, it's our experience that you're not going to be able to steal. You're not going to have base stealing opportunities as often as you would think. So we're going to squeeze every last base we can get out in non-steal situations. We're going to use our speed aggressively on the bases in other situations. And that was perfectly on display against Taiwan this weekend. I thought that was he hit that one on the head.
Yep. So some kind of funky baseball at times this weekend. But, again, good to see the Japanese national team playing. I'm just not sure what these games mean for a tournament that's going to take place a year from now.
The national team is playing. People, I mean, let's see. It was 34,000 yesterday. And
that's Saturday? Those are leftovers from the Yamamoto retirement game.
No, they claimed the stadium now.
I know.
But I never seen so many 34 shirts in my life on my way into the park, though.
That's because you never went to a Fernando Valenzuela game.
Ah, fair enough. I did, but it was at Candlestick Park, and only two-thirds of the fans were Dodgers fans.
Only two-thirds. That's probably true in those years.
In those years, yeah.
All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, this is kind of a leftover question from Glenn in Tokyo that we weren't able to get to last week, so we apologize, Glenn, because it was really timely, but it's still timely. And he says, with the talk of MLB having the larger-than-normal number of high-quality free agents receiving little in the way of offers, tanking theories abound, as they head into spring training, do you think it will have a trickle-down effect on the types of players we might see looking to come to MPB or sign with MPB clubs in mid-season? In parentheses, when the Giants get desperate again, etc.
Glenn, the Giants are always desperate.
No, I think they're all. If desperate means we like to collect talent, then they're always desperate.
Yeah.
It's just a hobby.
It is.
But good question. There, were, in fact, when Glenn sent in this question, there were some really high-priced quality free agents still out there. Ian Desmond was still out there. I think Yovani Gallardo was still out there. Marlon Byrd is still out there. Jimmy Rollins, I really can't see him playing shortstop for the Sabre Lions this year, but they probably need somebody to play short. Pedro
Lee, I heard he's retiring, but
yeah. So there's some guys out there, and the list looks really yummy, but my answer to this question is I just don't see a lot of guys who are veterans making that mid-season jump, and a lot of these guys are probably thinking, if I don't get an MLB job, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to coach or I'm staying home. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's going to impact. Maybe we might get one guy who we might have
David
heard
Freeze, I could see. But
Easy, yeah. I don't know about him either.
We had Johnny Gomes, and I think that was the big name. And, it has happened. Obviously, some guys have come over here at not the bitter end of their career, but where contract issues and free agent issues, sort of conspired against them. Mm-hmm. And guys have come over here. I guess the famous case happened in the 80s when Bob Horner came here during the collusion years. And it was basically because nobody was signing free agents. And that was, all the teams got together. So this is a little different. This is a case of just the way the contracts are done with the union and the players' agreement. So is it gonna bring guys over here? Yeah, I think so. I think it will, but I think it's in concert with a number of other things. I think it's in concert with the realization the Japanese ball is pretty good,
mm-hmm.
and that it might be, rather than sit out a year, come and play Japanese baseball and see what it's like. Well, why not?
I got a few names on the pitching list that I like to throw out to you, see what you think. Randy Wolf.
Yeah.
Tim Lincecum.
Wow, he's weird enough that he might do it.
Grady Sizemore is still out there.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Alex Rios.
Actually, I'm surprised the Giants have not tried to sign Grady Sizemore because he's played second base.
Hashtag high heat.
Heck, they might try to sign Tim Lincecum because he played second base in junior high school.
They might sign somebody if they heard they were visiting second base, right? No, I think Luis is going to do well for them this year. Okay, all right, so that's the answer. I don't see guys like that coming over, but it's possible. I doubt it. I think they're going to go for cheaper solutions to whatever holes they have to fill, and those guys wouldn't be cheap. So I would say no, but... Yeah, I've been wrong before, and I'll be wrong again. Just wait till next week.
Well, that's a good thing because it means you're trying.
Okay. Next question is from Stuart Miller. It's a high heat question. It came via the Twitter feed. He says, what is the potential? And this is another holdover question, so we apologize to Stuart. What is the potential for Akitake Okada being a full-time starter with the Carp this year? Hashtag high heat.
Well, Okada has just been promoted. They didn't know what to do with him after they drafted him, and they were debating. It was kind of interesting. I had this discussion with Jonathan Fine in Nashville, and he said, my needs are as far as, what the foreign pitchers we want is going to depend on what the team decides to do with his Japanese pitchers, who's going to be a starter and who's going to be a reliever.
Exactly.
And so I had to think that, their decision first of all, Daichi Osara was going to be a starter this year. He was being, pushed to be to go back into the rotation, and then he got hurt.
Elbow.
Yep. And then the next day it's like, and Okada's now going to be groomed to be a starter. Okay. So I guess that now, but that's not Stewart's question. The question is, what is his potential to stick in the rotation? And I think right now, if it takes them until the 29th of February to decide whether they want to use the guy as a starter, my answer would be nobody thinks he's going to stick in the rotation this year.
Yeah. He had gotten a lot of strong praise this spring, but he looks to me like he's not ready. He doesn't have enough. His secondary pitches, he's got to develop, I think. And he doesn't really have a great fastball. It's adequate. I don't see him being a rotation guy because I think people will make the adjustments to him the first and second time through the order. He's that kind of guy. But he's got a good enough heater, good enough command that he could be effective out of the bullpen. Of course, with the Daichi Osara, and he had an elbow, and we don't know what can happen. He could be out for a little while. He could be out for a long while. And I just think it depends on how he adjusts. But I think he has a chance to make the first team out of the preseason. And after that, it's how he adjusts and gets stronger. But he was their first pick. He's not all that big.
So right now, Yokoyama, the second pick, is ahead of him in the pecking order. Has had a very good spring. I agree with John. I think Okada, basically, he has the raw talent, or they wouldn't have picked him first. But he needs time to develop it. He needs the ability to develop it, and he's going to need time to pitch. And I don't know. I think making him a starter gives him that, or I would probably prefer him to be in long relief.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I don't know if anybody actually uses long relievers anymore. It's pretty much four innings for the starter.
Hashtag high.
And 5 1 inning
guys. If he can make that far, huh? Or in Junichi's case, if the bases are loaded and nobody out in the third inning, and the pitcher spot comes up, hey, dude, we'll see you next week. Yeah. Yeah, so long relief, whatever kind of relief, but out of the bullpen, I could see that because that would give him an opportunity to pitch maybe a couple innings and sit down and maybe face and six or seven batters. Yeah,
if he has a chance, you know, to go through the rotation once plus, you know, which is really going to be the big thing for him.
Okay, all right. Now this is a mystery question, and I suspect it's from Yaku Night Owl. Because I found it buried in some material that I was storing for off-season topics that I wanted to get to, but I don't remember, so we'll just call this mystery person. If it's you, Owly, let me know, buddy, and I apologize, but this question was sent last year, probably in September or October, and I just got buried. So the question is, why is it more common to see converted pitchers have success as position players in MPB? Which I thought was a really good question.
It is a good question. Well, I think the answer is that if you know, it's sort of like, how do you get to be a second baseman for the Giants?
Hashtag.
Which is, if you think, and I'm going to go here, is if you have a modicum of pitching talent in NPB, they're going to make you a pitcher. And then, you know, we'll figure it out later. But if you can almost pitch, they want you to be a pitcher, which is why Shohei Ohtani is amazing. That he's allowed to hit. Now, most of these guys don't succeed as pitchers. You know, most of these guys will have some adjustment that they can't make, and they'll end up as position players. Happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of really good players started out their careers in NPB as pitchers. So, however, the other question is how many guys start out as position players or who were at one point or another, essentially became position players for their career and ended up as pitchers. That's a pretty small group. And the only guy I can really think about is Jun Hagiwara, who was a shortstop with Oryx, who Oryx turned into a reliever, and then he was a reliever for the Swallows. I think he had pretty much one decent year out of the Swallows bullpen about 7-8 years ago. I can think of one guy who was a pitcher with Lotte and Hanshin, and he was Shoji Toyama, and he was a pitcher, and then he was ineffective, and he was used as a first baseman pinch hitter.
Uh-huh.
And then he went back to Hanshin where he became a left-handed relief specialist. But but he was a pitcher to begin with, so.
Okay. Well, I talked to one of my friends who's a scout, and he said he gave this information here. He said Japanese kids from an early age or even in high school are put into multiple rows or positions. So they have to play different positions. You have to get used to playing the outfield, or you have to get used to playing infield spots. So they're fundamentally sound anywhere. And then, obviously, my opinion was that a lot of these kids who are the better athletes end up being pitchers.
Yep.
But they've always been able to hit. Some of the times you see that when you go to Koshien, some of the best athletes on the field are pitchers who are also really, really good hitters.
Sure.
And so they can think their way through the game. So even if they can't pitch through a lineup, they can think along with the pitcher. And so if they don't generate the velocity or they don't have the ability on the mound, they certainly still maintain that ability to get the bat on the ball as hitters. And then because they're fundamentally sound from a young age, it doesn't take that much to get them into, you know, but the only person I can think of, and I know there are more, but right now, Yuhei Takai is the guy. And when you see him, his footwork when he's in the outfield, he's not a great outfielder. He's not fast. He's not fleet of foot or anything. But his footwork is really good. And that's what I mean by the fundamentals. You can tell that they're there.
Sure, he was a number one draft choice as a pitcher.
And you just look at his footwork, and it's really good. Even in the batter's box, he's really good with his feet.
Well, I mean, you could probably have an all-star team of guys who started their professional careers as pitchers. I mean, you could have this guy who plays for Oryx now. He used to play for Nippon Ham. He was a right fielder, still is. Yoshio Itoi.
Uh huh.
Yeah, he started his career as a pitcher. Takaro Ishii is now a coach with the Fighters. With the Hiroshima Carp. He had one win. He's one of the two players in NPB history with the 2,000 hits and a pitching win.
Mm-hmm.
So quite a few players started out as pitchers.
All right. So apologize. I think that's Yakuyo Naidao, but I'm not sure. But thank you for everyone for sending in the questions. Yeah. And I wanted to mention that Glenn from Tokyo says, "Go Tigers." I didn't read that part. He says, "Go Tigers." So we got to get that in.
Where are they supposed to go?
To the top.
Oh, okay. as a side note, I have to mention this as somebody. I went to my first BayStars game of the year, and their emblem on everything BayStars says fifth, and apparently
hashtag high.
The BayStars were getting some stick from the reporters who couldn't help but crack that this is your team's ambition for the season, fifth place. So
poor Michael West Bay, don't listen, Michael. Just turn it off right now.
And it's in fact the fifth year under DNA. So there you go. So yeah. don't fall for that propaganda. It's
the marketing experts that they are. All right, one note for next week. Our off-season workout programs have been completed. They're done. It's time to start our regular season routine. That means we're going to have shows weekly, and it's going to start with the prediction shows. So we'll have two guests on next week and the following week. Please make sure to tune in for those. And we'll tell you which teams we think are going to win the league races. Ha, ha, ha.
Ha, ha, ha. So are you excited that the season's a couple of weeks away?
I'm thrilled. I can't wait. I'm really excited for, you know I don't like fake baseball. So I love the fact that we're going to have games count. And we'll be able to talk about what's going on and who's making the mistakes as a manager. You know me, I'll be shooting my mouth off like normal. So anyone else who has questions, please send them by email to ykyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at JBWPodcast, hashtag High Heat. And you can also go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. And look for us on iTunes and subscribe. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Thanks for sticking with us.
Live and exclusive from around the globe, America's network for global sports, One World Sports. One World Sports is the place to discover top competition, including the Yomiuri Giants, the Yankees of Japan, Nippon Professional Baseball's Climax Series, Europe's iconic soccer clubs, Arsenal, Bayern Munich, Chelsea, Juventus, plus NASL's greatest soccer franchise, the 2015 champion New York Cosmos. This is One World Sports. Watch One World Sports on your TV, tablet, or smartphone. One World Sports, a sports network like no other.